Welcome to Healthcare and Hire, a podcast for healthcare professionals and aspiring healthcare executives looking for information, association, and inspiration from higher-level leaders across the healthcare industry. I'm Iqbal Acha, career consultant, healthcare recruiter, and registered pharmacist. Every week, I sit down to interview healthcare executives, clinical leaders, medical entrepreneurs, and industry experts to learn how they got to where they are today, what they see as the future of healthcare, and what they're doing to make healthcare more accessible, affordable, and effective. Let's find out more about today's guest. Dr. Allison Brewer-Jones is the Senior Project Manager of Specialty Healthcare at Walmart. She supports optometric professional relations, clinical services, and healthcare practices for both independent and associate doctors. Before moving into her current position, Dr. Jones served as a Senior Talent Specialist, where she led recruitment efforts for dental, optometry, and pharmacy across five states. She's also practiced as an optometrist in Arkansas, Missouri, and Oklahoma. Dr. Jones earned her Doctorate of Optometry degree from Northeastern State University, Oklahoma College of Optometry, and her MBA from Purdue University. Hello, Dr. Jones. Welcome to the Healthcare and Hire podcast.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
I'm so glad to have an opportunity to chit chat with you and kind of catch up. It's been what, through 2 or 3 years since we've seen each other?
It has. Yes. It doesn't quite seem that long, but yes, it has been.
That is a sign of a good friendship and a good relationship. So I'll take it. I'll absolutely take it. And Allison, I'm so glad that you said yes. There's so many questions that my listeners are going to want to know, especially with a Fortune 1 company. So we'll delve into that. But I'm sure that there are some listeners that are meeting you for the first time. Why don't we take this opportunity and have you formally introduce yourself? Tell us a little bit about who you are, what your role is, and how do you help take healthcare to a higher level?
Yeah, absolutely. So as you said, I am an optometrist, but currently working for Walmart, and I'm a senior project manager in the optical space. My primary projects deal with optometry, professional relations, clinic, and then just practice services. So I do a variety of different things inside of the company, but two of my big projects lately are the Walmart Health Clinics, which we'll I'm sure talk more about, and then also remote doctor care inside of our optometry spaces, inside of our sublease spaces. And then lastly, ongoing project always is professional relations with all of the Walmart affiliated optometrists.
And that is a huge topic that, you know, when we think about from a talent acquisition perspective, employee engagement, professional relations has so much more involved with that because you're not just dealing with the people that deal with your patients or customers. Like, these are professionally licensed individuals that have unique needs. So we will definitely touch on that. I'm sure we will. For the listeners that are wondering or probably scratching their heads, like, you know, I just buy my groceries from Walmart.com or I do my pickup. And I know they have a pharmacy, but I didn't know that they have a health division. Yeah, let me tell you. And full disclaimer, I was a Walmart employee for many years. So I can probably go through many, many details about the organization, but that is not why I'm here. I am here to talk about Allison and Allison's journey. But just to give some context to the listeners, many of you are familiar with Walmart, whether you're in the United States or China or India. It ranked the number one company on the Fortune 500 for 10 consecutive years. Like, 10 years in a row, which is remarkable. The company has over 2.3 million employees at over 10,000 stores under 46 banners in 24 countries. Allison mentioned two of the 5, 6, 7 divisions within health and wellness, right? There's optometry, there's clinics, and I come from a world of pharmacy, but there's also laboratory, dental, behavioral health, which are all wrapped up into one beautiful package at the company. And from an organizational standpoint, when you think about the size from, you know, an employee perspective, it's always necessary to look at the dollar side. It is a for-profit company, and the organization is actually proud to say that it did $105.28 billion in sales last year. I don't think I've ever said that out loud. It is remarkable. It's kind of like unimaginable when you see a B after three digits. But that is Walmart in a very small nutshell, which is a lot to cram in. But Allison, enough about the company, as you know, all the great things that it does and the products that it, you know, offers. Let's talk about like your world within Walmart. You know, again, as an optometrist, and specifically in the role that you're playing today as a project manager, like you've mentioned three very important pieces, right? You've mentioned, you know, professional relations. You've mentioned you know, a variety of other things. Talk to me a little bit about, you know, what you're seeing today, or maybe something that, you know, within the time frame that you've been in this role. If I'm not mistaken, you started almost like 10 or 11 months previously, and you've seen and had to deal with a lot. We're all, you know, facing a post-pandemic world where the world has been turned upside down, not just for patients, but for professionals. Share with me a little bit about some of the initiatives that your organization has made a priority and what your tasks have been in that space to help the company, the providers, and the patients really get the quality care that they need. And, you know, just some of the details around that and where you've been able to step in and make a difference.
Absolutely. So yes, you know, the world has changed. Absolutely. And in healthcare, we've changed even more, right? And then if we go even a step further into optometry, we've changed even more because COVID had a direct impact on us, but we weren't directly involved throughout the entire pandemic. So it shaped a lot of our careers in different ways. And inside of Walmart and inside of professional relations, that's been very important. So a majority of our doctors at Walmart are sublease doctors, meaning they run their own private practices inside of a sublease space at Walmart. So COVID changed that, right? It changed everything, the whole dynamic. And access to care has gotten even more difficult post-pandemic. And access to care has always been something that's been very, you know, heavy on my heart, if you will. Missions and providing care to underprivileged communities has always been something that I've been very, very involved with. And my practice itself, when I was practicing, was in a very rural area in Missouri. My closest ophthalmologist was an hour and a half to 2 hours away in all directions. So I was in a very underserved community. And that kind of built my career where it is now. And so with Walmart, we are in so many small communities that a lot of corporate competitors are not in. So access to care for us is very important. And like you said, inside of the pharmacies, we've had large initiatives with the diabetic community and kind of reaching that population. And that is equally so on our optometry side as well. We want to make sure that all patients are served in all walks of life. So That has changed things and kind of got us looking in a different direction towards remote care. And as you said, I've been in role. We're not quite a year yet. We're getting close, but have been with Walmart for 6 years. So practiced inside of Walmart and then also have worked on the home office side for about 3 years. But so as I was coming over into this role, that was one of my biggest challenges and biggest projects as a project manager is how do we manage this? How do we manage this access to care problem? I mean, it is a problem. It's a US problem too. And so that has been the challenge that I've kind of tackled this year.
It's not a small challenge nonetheless, right? And you know, this brings up other questions for me as well. Like having been a licensed professional with direct patient care, if moving away from that environment and into a larger, impactful, you know, I'll say executive position, but the reality of it is you're not dealing with patients one-on-one anymore. And that has to be, you know, an adjustment. That's the nice way of putting it, right? It's got to be a huge adjustment because you go through all of this training and you learn so much about the eye and how the eye can reveal so many different disease states and, you know, what therapies are available to provide holistic care. And then to sort of like shelf that or put that on the side to be able to focus on greater things. Like what went through your mind when those kinds of, you know, when you were like, do I really want to say goodbye to John and Mary? Like I love John and Mary. I see them like, you know, twice, three times, four times a year. But you know, there's this opportunity. So tell me a little bit about that. Like, was that a natural instant like gratification? Like, boom, yes, of course. This is a no-brainer. Or was that more of an internal struggle?
It was absolutely an internal struggle. So I would say that my path is maybe a little bit different than some of my other colleagues in corporate. I practiced for 3 years. So I was a new grad. I had only practiced for 3 years and this opportunity came up and it was very difficult. You know, 3 years, I just feel like I know what I'm doing now, right? Like I'm on my own. I'm treating my patients. I'm seeing them return. I'm building it. I had grown my practice. It had been a Walmart location that hadn't had a doctor in 5 years. So, I mean, there was no one. We started from the ground up and built it up to a full schedule. So I had finally got to the point where, you know, I had a full book. I'd worked so hard and then was kind of approached with this. And it was difficult. It was very difficult. I had to think about it from a larger perspective, take a step back and say, yes, I can influence 20, 25, maybe 30 patients' lives in a day, right? But that's literally all that I'm capable of doing. I reach a limit. I can't do any more, depending on how long of a day I work and all of those sorts of things, but you literally reach a limit. And so when I took that step back and thought, you know, stepping away from my indirect or my direct patient care into indirect patient care, I'm working with doctors every single day. I've probably spoken, it's the end of the day today, right now, and I've probably spoken to 10 doctors today. So if each of those 10 doctors saw 20 or 30 patients today, indirectly, how many patients have I affected? And so I had to think about it in a different way, a different light. And that's kind of what got me to make the decision to step out. But it was tough being a newer grad, if you will, because lots of my corporate colleagues had been in practice 10 or 15 years, and then they had decided to make this step. It was kind of the next step in their career. You know, it made sense. And so now things have even changed and I've kind of changed career paths and education and have grown even more into this role. And I think it's where I'm meant to be, honestly. I definitely do not regret my decision by any means.
That's both inspiring and informative. So I'm very grateful for that. And I'm sure the listeners will probably take that to heart if they're facing an opportunity and they're like, I don't know, do I want to leave it all behind? I was in that position myself as well. And I had to ask the same question. So I'm grateful for you to be able to share your story. Allison, you mentioned just a few seconds ago that you had spoken to about 10 doctors today. And I'm curious to understand, like from a professional relations perspective, like what are some of the concerns and what are some of the compliments that you hear from some of your doctors that are independent? Like I know, you know, there's a perception that most professionals have about corporate ownership of a healthcare site. Right. And it's regardless whether it was optometry or, you know, in other cases, respiratory therapy and labs, like there's usually this unhealthy, perspective that some people have. And then, you know, there's also individuals that are just, ambiguous. They're not sure. But when you're working with doctors that are running their own practice and they're contracting with Walmart and Sam's Clubs at those locations, like I'm sure there are different issues that pop up. What are some of those issues? How do you address them? And how do you help their lives, both personally and professionally, improve so that they can continue doing great work?
Absolutely. So it's very different than what you would think about of what I actually do every day. So of course, there's the transactional aspect of, you know, maybe my contract needs to be modified or, you know, I want to make this amendment or something of that nature. I definitely do those things too. But a lot of what I do every day is just doctors calling me like, hey doc, I'm having this issue with an insurance, or, you know, what can I do? What do you think? What do you see others doing? And so I almost feel like it's like I get to be friends and colleagues and just have conversations. What's going well in practices, what's not. The two biggest projects, the remote idea, that's a lot of what I'm doing right now. And it's a lot of just, what does this pilot inside of Walmart look like? What, you know, how as a sublease doctor in my independent practice does this influence me? And then same thing with the Walmart health clinics. What are these? There's only 25 of them. What does that look like for optometry? How is optometry involved? So a lot of corporate kind of news matters questions that come along with that. I do a lot of that from day to day as well. And our team does. There's a team of three of us. So I don't want to say that I am the one and only, because there are three of us, and we all talk to many people a day. But that's kind of the inside, if you will, of my in and out. I know that's kind of vague. They are private practices. So in no way, you know, they're running their practice the way they see fit. And in no way are we influencing that. But it's just kind of a colleague to colleague. Let's bounce ideas off of each other, honestly, is how a lot of conversations go.
There's a lot of strength in professional camaraderie, right? People just will naturally gravitate to like. So if you're an optometrist, you're very likely just going to want to hang out with another optometrist rather than a respiratory therapist or a phlebotomist. There's commonalities, but not as common as, you know, having, you know, trudged through optometry school for 4 years and, you know, seeing and dealing with a lot of patients. Allison, you mentioned telehealth and you've mentioned, you know, doing remote eye exams. You know, I'd love to be able to understand a little bit more about that. I know that there are companies that offer that type of instrumentation, more just like a refraction as far as I'm aware of. But, you know, what has that been like in terms of adoption and introduction to the company, both for associate doctors as well as sublease doctors?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm glad I kind of left that vague, right? So let's explore that and unpack that a little bit more. Currently inside of Walmart, it is our independent or sublease doctors only. So our associate doctors are not practicing any remote or telehealth. In the world of optometry, I feel like we're calling it two different things: remote eye care, teleoptometry, and we kind of all mean something different when we say those words. So at Walmart, what it looks like, a lot of our sublease doctors had approached us and said, hey, we're interested in access to care. We would love to start these remote doctor satellite practices. You have clinics in rural areas that have been without doctors for a long period of time. One doctor specifically went out and, you know, got small business loans and started this all up. I'm sure there's more than just her, but she's the one that I'm aware of, and started this practice. And so kind of catching on that, oh, this is an idea, you know, this could provide access to care. How can we help? It's your independent practice, but how can we help? How can we make this more accessible? So our team pulled together a plan that remote care, what were the barriers? What equipment were they needing? And so there were kind of four key components. One was a digital lane, so a digital phoropter, VA chart that all connects together to your pretest equipment. And then an anterior segment component, a way to view the front surface of the eye. And then a posterior segment, and then an audiovisual connection, because that's important with patients, you know, that the interaction face to face, if you will. Mm-hmm. And so what we did is we kind of put together a proposal and got budget approval to pilot this in several locations. So through their subleases, they're contracting for this equipment and choosing their own software, choosing their own setup, if you will, however they want to do the audiovisual connections and those sort of things. So it is very much still the true Walmart autonomy of building your own practice. But what we're trying to help with is the equipment piece. So I've almost transitioned to calling it remote doctor care. We've been saying teleoptometry, and in the last week or so, as we've been exploring, I've been at optometry's meeting with colleagues. I realized that maybe that's not the best way to describe it. So I don't know, we may have to go through a whole rebranding here. But that is essentially what the pilot looks like. And doctors are just raising their hand. Hey, I'm interested. I want to do it in this state. My state laws allow for this. This is how I feel like I need to build it. And, you know, I would like to contract for this space and this equipment. And so I help just walking through the pieces of, you know, this, the internet, is internet available at this location? Some of, that's crazy to think about, but some of our locations are so rural that there's not fast enough internet in those rural towns to support it. So that's step one. And then, you know, we kind of build it out from there.
That's pretty remarkable. And, you know, sometimes myself included, listeners will forget, like, you know, you're not just Chicago or San Diego or, you know, Tampa. I mean, you're like Oskaloosa and, you know, like little tiny towns like Keokuk, Iowa. And, you know, just like tiny towns where like you have like 5,000, maybe 8,000 people. And it's just, you really have to account for all that. So I'm just, you know, it's really good to hear how like you maintain priority, which is when, you know, your doctor's needs and the practice's ability to grow with the ability to also leverage the size and scope of what Walmart is to get the resources that they need. What's adoption been like? Or are there any success stories that you've heard from some of your doctors where you're sort of like, okay, you know, we've only piloted this out now, but I mean, look at this. This is a reason why everybody else should jump on this bandwagon.
Absolutely. So this is a relatively new, we've been working on this project for over 6 months, but we got the budget approved a little over a month ago. So we have 15 sites up and running now with our equipment. There are other doctors that were outside of this pilot and doing it on their own, of course. But yes, there are some very specific success stories, and I don't want to share those individuals' names, but some of them have been interviewed, if you will, by corporate publications and things of that nature. So some quick Googling could identify some of those individuals, but so much success that those doctors who kind of pioneered this and started this are expanding. They're, you know, moving on to location number five, location number three, you know, they're expanding. So I see more since this only launched about a month ago. We have 36 other doctors in progress right now.
You have a waiting list, huh?
Yeah, we're getting there. And so just talking to doctors every day and explaining what I just explained to you of what this looks like, what are the pieces? That's a lot of just, it's so new. What is it? What do I need to research? Where do I even start? And I'll say I started in this project 6 years ago when I joined the company. I was on the advisory panel for Walmart as an OD. And this was one of my projects that I started on 6 years ago. So it's crazy to think that this has been ongoing all of this time. Yes.
That's hilarious.
And I was kind of, I always joke that I was recruited to the project because I was the skeptic, you know. I came from a state where advanced procedures were the norm. I'm laser certified, you know, all of those sorts of things. And so I was the skeptic to like poke holes in it. And so it's kind of funny what's evolved out of 6 years and how much I believe in it now, but different mindset as I learned more.
Well, we all grow, right? And we all grow from experiences and we also grow from learning from others. So that's one of the reasons why we have this podcast is to help other people grow. So that's wonderful. Allison, you also mentioned a third category, right? We've talked about professional relations. We've talked about teleoptometry or telehealth. And then there is the third category, which is the clinics. And I'd love to understand a little bit more about what your involvement has been with the clinics. You've mentioned like there's only like 25 right around the country. And I think five are here in my backyard, Chicago. But you know, there's been some massive growth and there's been a lot of, from what I see, a lot of great fanfare about what services are being offered and how it's changing the lives of, in particular, rural populations and populations that are low socioeconomic. Tell us a little bit more about what the clinics are. I don't think that everybody, especially, you know, for somebody that might be in, you know, a Midwestern state that doesn't have access to this, what are Walmart health clinics? What do they constitute? What are some services? And what have you been able to do as part of that lift in order to be able to bring the services to the public?
Absolutely. So yeah, Walmart Health has been my big project for the last couple of years. I've been involved. We started the clinics off and got them launched right before COVID hit. Honestly, that's kind of when they started. So it's been a slow rollout just with COVID and building delays and all those sorts of things that have happened all over the country. But Walmart Health is exactly as you described it. You painted it perfectly. It is a clinic in areas of healthcare deserts, if you will, is kind of how we foresee these locations in areas where people genuinely need access to care. And optometry is a portion. And then also primary care and dentistry is pretty standard in all of our locations, as well as on-site blood labs. We have radiology. We have even nutritional services in some. We have PT in some, mental health services. We have a wide range, and every clinic does not look the same. So every clinic looks a little bit different. And so yes, we just opened number 25 in the Tampa area. Yes. So lots of travel of going to our new clinics in Florida. We launched Florida this year. And before Florida, we have clinics in Georgia, Illinois, and Arkansas as well. And kind of my role and what do I play? I help facilitate. There are doctors in those stores usually, right? There are subleases in that store. So I help facilitate the doctor into the new space. The clinic itself, I guess I should mention, is not, it's located beside the Walmart, if you will. So our subleases are inside of the store. So it's a new location for the doctor in that multidisciplinary space with those other specialties. Allows more collaborative care. We also have some advanced instrumentation in those sites, full visual fields and OCTs. So just a little bit different of a modality of practice. Things look a little bit differently. But as a whole, it's gone great. All of the doctors have such great experiences and have shared such wonderful patient stories with me. And my official title in that role is relationship manager with those optometrists who are in the Walmart Health clinics. So I'm with them from day one of, you know, the clinic being built all the way through the grand open. I'm usually on site for that as well, for them as they're seeing their first patients and helping with that transition. So lots of travel and lots of face-to-face time. But yeah, that's a little bit about what the clinics look like in a nutshell.
That's a lot in a nutshell. And I think that that's really great. You know, when you see how important relationship building is with optometrists and other healthcare providers, you know, that's been the staple now for quite some time with a lot of organizations, and they'll continue to be that. But how do you see that relationship modality or the type of relationship, the quality of it? How do you see it changing and playing a different, do you see it moving in a different direction over the next 3 to 5 years? And if yes, what are some of the tools, the techniques, and, you know, some of the stories that you think are going to be critical for people that are going to be in a position like yours to really recognize, and that companies are going to have to invest in order to continue the types of relationships that are being built today and the ones in the future?
Right. It's been a different world. I mean, just professional to professional, we're not seeing each other. It's been 3 years since we've seen each other. You know, we're just not in person as much as we were, and the whole world has turned more remote. But I've embraced that almost. I love it. You have more time at home now and all of those things. So, you know, probably 3 or 4 months ago, I would have told you that things were going to look totally different, that everything was going to look different. And then now I've been to Vision Expo, AACO, optometries meeting. I've been to a lot of these large meetings, and people are coming back in full force. ODs are there. Everybody's there. We're all happy to see each other. So I think it's kind of a little bit of both. We're now embracing the technology and the remote ways to connect with each other. We've all learned how to engage more remotely, but then we are so excited to return in person too. So I think the in-person networking, face-to-face, is still important. It hasn't gone away. So I think that's a very important piece and has been very important for us as a professional relations team. We've been out and about to pretty much every meeting, trying to get out to some of the state association meetings even, and just catch up for lost time. You know, there was a couple of years where we didn't get to see each other. So have made that a top priority for us this year. But then just moving forward, I think you're going to see a little bit of both. We're moving more remote, but then scale back on that a little bit and have some of those in-person meetings thrown in there too. And we're going to kind of have to find the happy medium, if you will.
Yeah, the hybrid modality. And I usually just operate in two extremes, right? Like I can go full force one or full force the other. But hybrid, I think will have, I mean, there will be merit in both. I can see that. But I think that hopefully we'll be able to get through this pandemic and really just get, when we get to the other side, really get to the other side, that it will be much, much more clearer for everyone.
We'll be right back after this short break.
Allison, you've had a really interesting career. You've mentioned this earlier, right? You started, you know, graduated, started working right away as an optometrist in a few different areas. And then you moved into a senior talent specialist role. And now you're in this project management role. And you've gotten an opportunity to not just see different slices of healthcare, right, from different perspectives, but you've also had an opportunity to have a touch with some very interesting people that have seen something in you and have helped either develop you or open doors for you. I mean, nobody, including myself or any of our listeners, are ever going to reach the top of a mountain by ourselves. It's just a natural fact. We all need others to either pour into us or shine or polish us to help us shine. Is there an individual or two that you'd like to thank on the show for maybe some of their contributions towards your professional success? Maybe it was early on, maybe it's been while you've been in this current role or anything in between. But I always ask my guests to come to the show with a name or two and a story behind that, because, you know, I know that, you know, sometimes we just take that thing for granted. Or we just don't even think about it. But I think it's important that for a mentor, a sponsor, somebody that's really done good things for us, that we give them a space so that they know how much they mean.
Absolutely. So of course, I mean, there are so many people, right? And so many people to thank along the way, but somebody that comes to my mind is early career, if you will. I mean, let's go back to high school. How did I even end up in healthcare? And Dr. Jim Davis in my hometown of Batesville, Arkansas, was kind of my mentor OD, if you will. I worked for him as a technician throughout the years. And he had a large medical practice that has been there, you know, his entire career. He was actually a pharmacist who became an optometrist. So he had an interesting story himself. But he taught me so much about relationships with people and relationships with your patients. You know, it's important in the corporate world that we build relationships, but it's important in our chairs every day that we build relationships too, because that's how you build a practice. So I think from very early on, he showed me the importance of that, and knowing, you know, somebody's grandson was in the local state baseball tournament or whatever that might be, you know, and how important it was to kind of keep up with your patients and the people around you in your lives. So I would say he's a big person who shaped my career. And then also I kind of want to take it a little bit different of a route, but my husband is somebody who's really influenced me. He's an attorney, so a different realm, if you will, a non-practicing attorney, I guess, if I throw that in there. You know, he just goes his all. I mean, he puts everything he has into whatever it is he's working on. And so to see that motivation and have that encouragement at home is also huge. It keeps me going because he's encouraging me to keep going. And then it's also nice, our brains work in two different ways. So to kind of have that other person who, you know, thinks in a very different way of, you know, how the law school teaches you to think, if you will, and then kind of my scientific brain, to have that mesh together. It definitely couldn't have gotten through any of my career without him. So we met and got married in optometry school. So he's kind of been with me for my career, if you will. So yeah, a little bit different of a direction, but both of those individuals have influenced my life tremendously.
I think it's really important and very, very heartwarming whenever I have a guest that acknowledges that their spouse plays a role in some capacity. What's your husband's name, by the way?
Dan. Yeah. Or Daniel. Yeah. But he goes by
Daniel Brewer Jones. You've been called out. Congratulations.
Oh, we'll see if he watches the podcast now.
I would hope so. Allison, you will have to sit him down and say, like, hey, get the popcorn. We're going to watch this. It's going to be awesome. Allison, there's so much that you've done. There's so much that you are doing, and I'm sure that you are going to continue to do amazing things. What's next on your professional to-do list? Maybe there's something that within the role that you're in today, you've already established as that's the next thing that I want to do while I'm here. Maybe it's something that you've already just recently done and you're like, I don't know how I'm going to top that. But I always ask my guests, like, what is it that you would say is like a feather in your hat that you are very proud of, or something that you've set your sights on that you want to go after next?
Yeah, you kind of read my mind with the feather in your hat. I in the last few years, right before COVID, the fall before COVID was starting, I decided that I wanted to start taking business classes. I wanted to take life in a different way. You know, I was just kind of interested. I'd never done any undergrad business classes at all. And Walmart offers a program for associates called Live Better You that affords the opportunity to enroll in classes. So it's $1 a day program for you. And so I decided, hey, why not? Let's try this out. Let's see how it goes. And kind of fell in love with the business world. So my went ahead with got prereqs and went on and got my MBA. And so that is a giant mountain that I feel like I just conquered. Very different going back to school, you know, like in my 30s, but out from optometry school, right? Like I was in optometry school in my early 20s. You know, I definitely see the level of dedication and how much my work ethic has changed, right, in over a decade. But it was a learning experience, and I think kind of humbling to go back to school. Very much a great opportunity, and I'm so glad that I did it. And maybe along the way, I don't know if it's just I have changed, I have grown, but, you know, I found myself thinking, like, this stuff comes so much easier. I love this, you know? And so it's just different. You're thinking about concepts and applying concepts and theories, and optometry school and science in general is you're memorizing facts and you're learning diseases and disease states and how you treat them. And so I think I just enjoyed the almost like autonomy of, well, let's take this theory and turn it into what I see how it applies to this project. So to answer your question, I don't know what is next. I haven't moved on from the delight of finishing my MBA yet, but taking some time to just focus on home and family and taking some of that time back, because the MBA took a lot of that time away. So I would say probably in my next 6 months or so, that's something that's big for me, is just kind of reconnecting back with the family life and getting some of that back. But then move on to a new mountain. I just haven't figured out what it is yet.
Well, number one, congratulations. That is a huge mountain to climb, especially if you have just done it especially when you go back, right? Yes. Like when you're just going straight through school, you're kind of like in that mindset, like, mm-hmm. This is what it is. And so I know what to do, right? But when you have to go back, it's an adjustment. Yes. But I'm glad that you found the concepts, you know, very easy, palatable and very easy to absorb and work with. But number two, if Dan, you're listening, yeah, I think he'll agree 100% that, you know, making family life the next mountain to climb, I'm pretty sure he's on board with that. And I'm sure he'd love to spend some time with his lovely wife again.
Yes, absolutely. There were many times that it was like, what have you gotten yourself into here? You know, like,
yeah, but
please,
I'm sure
don't
he probably
ever go
encouraged
back to school.
You too, right?
He did, absolutely. But, you know, as we're going through it, and it's like, oh my goodness, like, don't decide you're going to go get another master's degree. I think we can just call it quits here. but no, he was a big encouragement and helped along the way. And COVID helped along the way too, because that was more time that I had to devote to those things that social events weren't happening and I wasn't traveling. And so I'm a big traveler, even outside of work, love to travel a lot. So it gave me some time to just be at home and appreciate being at home as well.
I can see that. And Allison, I've known you for some time, right? Yeah, you have a big heart. You're very energetic. You have a lot of passion. You do things for other people and other organizations and causes. I'd love to understand a little bit about what are some of your passions? Like, what is it that really gets you jazzed within the profession or even outside of it? Like, what are the things that you might be spending some time, not necessarily away from Dan right now, because you're still trying to get that back, but maybe part of the next mountain that you climb will incorporate some of this too. Love to know what that looks like.
Yeah, I have been very involved with the Bosch organization or SBosch, the student organization. And what that is a mission-oriented organization that travels to different countries and provides remote eye care to individuals in need. So was very involved in school, and then that passion just continued. And so every year I go on at least one trip as the checkout doctor with students. So it kind of gives me that opportunity to spend time with patients, spend time with students, because I need that. I need that like excitement in our career of somebody just starting and, oh my goodness, they see a cataract that is, we would grade like a +4 or +5, NS. And it's, you don't see those in the States very often. And so like to see those, it's not exciting for the patient. So I don't want to present it in that way, but to see some of that advanced disease state and experience that in your career and learn how to treat it. Honestly, that excitement is fun to see with students for the first time. So that's an organization that I am very large part of. Excited to see as the world gets back to normal, that those trips get back to normal. I felt so awful for those students going through right now that haven't had that opportunity. So I encourage all of them, you can still do it after you graduate. You need to do it. You see and experience different walks and paths of life and eye care in a different light, because eye care looks very different in other countries. So I think it's very important that everybody experiences that. So that's one thing that I'm very involved with. And then there are some other local organizations that are very similar to that I devote time to as well. So essentially just access to care and giving back and spending some time with patients and seeing patients. So that's kind of my side project, if you will.
It's a pretty cool project. And I've heard a lot about Bosch. So I know exactly, what the mission, what the organization does and the great work that it, really does provide to underserved people all around the world. So if any of you have a question about what is Bosch or what can you, what, talk to Allison. You will have her contact information on the website when this episode airs. So I promise that. Allison, you hold a very special place, not just in terms of what we've been able to build as a friendship, but also with the organization. You get a chance to really see and develop other people along their professional journey as well. So I'm always curious to know, because we're all on this leadership journey, we're all trying to improve ourselves in different ways. What's on your nightstand? Like, what are some books, videos that you consume in order to develop yourself as a leader, and also things that you share with others or that you encourage others to look at, read, and view so that they can also grow in that space as well?
Absolutely. I'm a huge reader. I'm a huge audiobook listener, podcast too, but I love books. I've always loved books. And so I try to always have two books going on. I love fiction books. And then I always have a nonfiction book going on too. So I try to, every day spend a little bit of time reading a nonfiction book, 15 minutes or something of that nature. And then instead of watching TV, I'm probably reading a book. But so I try to even it out and have multiple books going on all at one time. But one of my favorite books, and I'm going to say two, because one of these is very cliche. I work for Walmart, so of course, you probably know what I'm about to say. But one of my favorite books, even before I worked for Walmart and all through my MBA, was Sam Walton's book, Made in America. I highly, highly suggest anybody in the business industry, if you haven't read it, I mean, absolutely read it and take a step back. I mean, you know, Walmart was founded on different theories and learning about those, and kind of Sam Walton's like store within a store and those sorts of concepts. I reference it so many times in all of my MBA writings. But so anyway, I that is one of my favorites. But I'm going to give a number two, since that one is a little cliche. Another one that I really love is The 4-Hour Workweek by Tim Ferriss. Yes, it's one of my favorites. I wish I could get to a 4-Hour Workweek. I have not mastered that book by any means. But it has so many great time management skills. So many of us have so many things going on. So how to efficiently address emails and voicemails and, you know, just different tactics of ways to conquer those mountains. So that is one of my all-time favorite books there as well. And then we, another offside of my corporate career and optometry career, if you will, is me and my husband have rental properties, and we flip them to rent them. So, I mean, we don't sell them, but we remodel rental properties and have several properties. And then we also have a ranch property that we've acquired in the last year or so. So those are kind of our side projects. I listen to lots of podcasts about investment, about property investment, things of that nature. And then have recently started diving into the cattle industry and all of those sorts of things. So all kinds of stuff floating around. Our little ranch of about 150 acres. We just recently got fenced, so we are very new into this. But so that's a new adventure. So a lot of my time is kind of spent on those two hobbies, if you will.
Allison, this is a side of you I had no idea.
My Arkansas roots have to come out a little bit. So.
I mean, they're beautiful roots, but man, this is like way out of left. I had no clue. Wow. Yes. Does everybody else on your team know about, you know, your little hobbies and side hustles?
Maybe. I don't know. They might have heard my frustrations here and there.
Now, did you do the fencing yourself or no? Did you contract that out?
The fencing, we didn't. We contracted out, but at the same time, we have been remodeling a property that we did all ourselves. And so we just had two things happening at once. And fencing, we fenced about 70 acres. If he's listening to this, he'll be like, oh no, that's wrong. But it was somewhere around that. And that's a large fence for two people. It would have taken us a long time to build that. It was a team of about 12 people who came in and, you know, built it for us. But we have been remodeling this rental property and learning along the way. And so many YouTube videos. How do I lay down this floor? Well, we're going to learn.
Wow. That's cool. That is really cool.
Yes.
Allison, as I'm sure many people that are listening to this are going to want to reach out to you, right? And sometimes maybe you already have like a pool of mentees and a pool of individuals that are like, you know, I really just want to come to work for Walmart, or I've been interviewing and I'm just not quite sure. Like, what are some of the qualities or characteristics that you personally look for in an individual when you're thinking like, you know, they would actually work well here. Like, they would be a good cultural fit. They'd work well either within my team or with another team. But what are some of the things that you and maybe Walmart as a whole, you know, strive to find in candidates when you're thinking about hiring or promoting somebody with, you know, to a different level?
Yeah, I think this goes back, you know, to my time, our time together in talent acquisitions and kind of all of the candidates that have spoke to and now growing in this role. I think one important thing that you already said was the culture of Walmart. The culture of Walmart is not what you would expect. It's a Fortune 1 company, but it is not ran like, you know, a corporate company you would expect. So reading Sam Walton's book is a great way to prepare for any of those corporate interviews, because you'll understand some of those key concepts that still live inside of Walmart today. So I think that's one tip that I would have for anyone. And used to, as you spoke about before, we had all aspects of healthcare. So as a talent acquisition partner, I not only recruited optometry, but I did pharmacy, I did dental, medical. I've done pretty much every realm inside of the Walmart space. And so I think back to those times I used to go and present at pharmacy schools, because that was some of the first campuses that I was able to be on. And I just loved students so much. And so this was something that I usually talked about. And that was the one key thing, was culturally make sure that Walmart is the cultural fit as you're looking. Healthcare at Walmart is very different. So understanding that piece, but then also personable, making relationships, being personable. I don't know how you present that in an interview, but presenting that in an interview, that you can talk to someone and relate to people. I think that is very big, that you can relate. And then I'm trying to think of a third one. I think those are usually my two biggest tips. A third one is probably what all of us would say in the talent acquisition space: take a look at your resume, or have a professional take a look at your resume. That's usually a big, big tip, is resumes can be tricky, and they can make or break if you get in front of that individual or not. And so just understanding those key pieces and what needs to be in the resume, and understanding Walmart's job descriptions look pretty different than a lot of other companies. So understanding what their corporate job descriptions and what job you're really applying for, honestly, can sometimes be difficult to understand. So I think those are my biggest tips, not really qualities, but tips, if you will. I took that a different direction. Sorry, hey, but
you have carte blanche to take it any way you want, Allison. And I think that that's actually unique, right? So I want people to be able to get as much value as they can from the guests that come on the show, because you see things differently. And if that helps the listener, you know, modify their strategy, by all means, it's very, very important. And I appreciate that a lot. Allison, there, you know, we're coming to a close, but, you know, I always ask my guests, you know, if you could go back to your younger self, you know, whatever, 20 years ago, and, you know, at some point, you know, I'm sure you hit a wall and you're like, oh my God, what am I going to do? It's not working. I'm scared. You know, it's not the right thing. And if you could go back and tell yourself, Allison, get a hold of yourself, you're going to be fine. All right. Just don't stop doing this, or start doing this now and you'll be there. What would that one piece of advice be?
Yeah, that's hard. I mean, definitely thinking back to optometry school, and I feel like probably most of us professionals say the same thing. That school was eye-opening, right? You had always been the top of your class wherever you were, and then you ended up with all of the people from the top of their classes. And so I don't think there's anything to prepare you for that. I think everybody needs to go through that humbling experience, if you will. And so, you know, we fail and we get back up. So national boards, that was tough. That, you know, I would go back and tell my younger self, like, you can do this, just do it. You've worked too hard for this, just study. And so studying has always been hard for me. I'm not a faithful studier. So I think I'd probably go back and give myself that advice. And then honestly, in what I just said, this is a little bit different than corporate, but I think I'd go back and tell my younger self, start looking at rental properties, start investing, because now I'm like, I wish I see all these other people who have way more properties. You know, what if I would have at a younger age thought of this? So I definitely would look at that a little bit differently too, but that's probably because that is my recent thing that I'm looking at. But definitely, you fall and you get back up. Embrace the hardship and keep going. You'll get there.
I think you're the first guest that's talked about investment as a strategy for the future. And, you know, you are going to be in one of my 50 episodes. And of the past 50 guests, like, you know, we all know it's a truth. When you get out of professional school, pharmacy, optometry, medical, you owe hundreds and thousands of dollars. That's like before, you know, or during the time you are also going to buy a house, get married, and maybe have some kids. And that's a lot of debt. And I think it's important that, you know, guests like you talk about that kind of reality. So thank you for being the first person to put that out there, and hope you don't mind me picking that up and bringing it front and center. But
yeah,
it's a, you know, it's a reality that people need to be aware of and to prepare for in that space.
Absolutely. And I think that's a great point. That's a disclaimer. I should say I had over $200,000 in debt. So please don't think that I didn't and still have some of that, but have invested in other debt. And I look at it in a different way. I definitely don't follow some of the strategies of paying off all of your debt. I think there is good debt and there is bad debt. And I don't view property investment as one of those bad debts. So there are ways to do it. There are investors, and don't think that you can't do it. If you'll put in the hard work, even if you have that debt load, you can make it work. So yeah, just some encouragement of we'll all get through this. We'll get through that debt someday.
Love it. Allison, you've been a breath of fresh air. I'm so thankful for your time and your insights. You're an amazing professional. I'm so proud to see how far you've come in your professional journey. I think we met like 4 years ago, 3 years ago, but just to reconnect with you and to have you come on the show, it means a lot. I'm wishing you absolutely the best of success in the near future. And as always, I look forward to continuing to see you take healthcare to a higher level.
Yes. Thank you so much for having me. It was so great to catch up.
Thanks for joining me on this episode of the Healthcare and Hire podcast. If you liked what you heard, be sure to follow and subscribe for more. I'm your host, Iqbal Acha, and I invite you to connect with me on LinkedIn, Instagram, and Twitter. Let me know what you thought about this episode or my show in general. Also, visit me at www.achainternational.com to learn more about how I help healthcare professionals and healthcare leaders advance their career, build a better brand, and create a leadership legacy. I'll be back next week with another episode. But until then, let's keep working to take healthcare to a higher level.